Hey, Bills Mafia. We know there's only one topic every day. All Bills, all the time. And now Matt Bove and Sal Capaccio are going really deep, talking Bills all year long, because it's always game day in Buffalo.
What two extremes we had for the Bills against the Tennessee Titans on Sunday afternoon at Orchard Park. Welcome in. It's always game day in Buffalo. Sal Capaccio, Matt Bove. Holy cow, Matt. The first half of the second half. Just two completely different football games, basically.
I didn't get comfortable with this game until pretty late, as far as the Bills are concerned. I know that the first half was so bad and the second half was so good, but it didn't feel like to me this game was really out of reach until they scored the touchdown to put them up two touchdowns, the Ty Johnson touchdown. At that point, it was 17-10, then it became 24-10. At that point, I was like, okay, yeah, you're probably going to win this game. You should definitely handle business at the end of this game here. But it was way too close for comfort for a lot of the game. I don't think the score is indicative of how the game felt for a lot of people watching it.
I was more comfortable than earlier than that. I think once I saw that they had kind of taken a bit of control and they were playing a bit of more of their game, and more so maybe that I didn't feel the Titans could really score much more, to be quite honest with you. So I thought the Bills defense, they had been bend, don't break, and then they just really started coming after Tennessee. But I totally get where you're coming from. I mean, why feel comfortable after what we saw in the first half? And of course, we've seen the Bills, you know, in certain situations, not be at their best. But let me give you some numbers here. Okay, listen to this, folks. All right, I want to talk about a tale of two halves. In the first half, yards 217-90 in favor of the Tennessee Titans.
That's crazy.
Second half yards in favor of the Bills, 299-72.
Wow.
I think I have to go back and look at this specifically. I believe the Titans had 1 yard in the third quarter.
That doesn't shock me at all, right? I mean, they basically got the ball to start the half. They went for it on that fourth and short.
Yes.
Get stuffed, lose yardage. The Bills go down and score. And then at that point, I think they had like another sack or something. Then they punted the ball to the Bills. They didn't really touch the ball in the third quarter very much. Yeah, it was definitely a tale of two halves. It felt like the Bills, I mean, they were down 10-0. They scored 34 unanswered points, which is just bananas in the NFL for that to happen.
Right.
There was a lot to clean up. There was a lot to like about the second half of the game, but there are concerns with the first half for sure. It was really, really sloppy.
Yeah, no doubt about it. They have to do a better job of, you know, starting the game. They started the game really well against the Jets, but this reminded me a lot. I kept thinking, this is like week one of the Cardinals. Right? Did it remind you of that game?
Yeah.
Where you're like, this is an inferior opponent. You should be able to beat this team. Why are you starting off like this? And come on, when is this thing going to get into gear? It did take quite a while for it to get into gear. All right, where do you want to start? You want to start with the bad, the good? You want to start with the bad first, the good?
No, we should start with
what you want to do.
We should start with the good, because quite literally, you look around the league and you do a lot of this. Like, it feels like we do a podcast after they beat the Jets, and there's a lot of negativity. And I'm not saying like there's not
reasons. Because they gave up Hail Mary.
I'm not saying there are not reasons to be critical or concerned. They won today by 24 points.
Yes.
There is a lot more good in this game than bad, even though the bad might have left like a very sour taste in the mouths of Bills fans, especially early on. So I think you definitely start with the good.
Okay.
And then we kind of funnel our way back to the, oh God, the first half was bad.
Okay, I like the way you think. I agree with you there. And it's something I say all the time, that if you just, like, you can't expect your team to be perfect. Now, they should have been better than they were in the first half. There's no doubt about it. But fans generally just look at their team through their own prism. They don't take a look at what's happening around the league. Look around the league. It's not easy to just go out there and, you know, wax opponents every week. 24 points to win by is massive in the National Football League. The Bills were 8.5 to 9 point favorites somewhere in there, and they still more than doubled that up as far as being a favorite and what they won by. And this is despite playing a pretty awful first half of football. But the good, obviously, they got things on track and really kind of started a little bit towards the end of the first half. But absolutely, the first drive of the second half set the tone for the rest of the second half. And what a massive, massive stand by the Bills on third down and fourth down, and especially Terrell Bernard on third down, jumping and hitting Tony Pollard. And then on fourth down, a great job by the defensive line. That really set the tone. And then from there, the Bills go down and score. They take the lead and never look back.
Yeah, Dwayne Carter makes a huge play on fourth down. It was Dwayne Carter and Taylor Rapp. They're both back in the backfield. Mm-hmm. Carter sheds a tackle. Rapp sneaks in. They force the turnover on downs. Then it got a little bit murky for the Bills. Like, they had, I believe, a penalty, and they had a loss of yards. Something, I forgot exactly what happened. But there are a lot of guys we're going to talk about in this episode, specifically Amari Cooper and Keon Coleman. But Dalton Kincaid may have saved this game twice for the Bills. Yes. With huge catches. I think it was like a 3rd and 17 or something.
I have it here. It was 3rd and 12. Yep. 11:01 left. And he made an incredible catch right in front of me for a 17-yard gain.
So, okay. So 17-yard gain, 3rd and 12. Yep. Down the sideline. He gets his elbow down on a contested catch. And then they score a few plays later to Amari Cooper on his first touchdown, first catch with the Bills. And then later in the game, as they were looking to go up 14, they had another long third down conversion. That was the play that was reviewed where it didn't low. Mm-hmm. We didn't know if he caught it or not. He catches it, fumble out of bounds. Bills get the ball. They score a couple plays later. So two big time catches for Dalton Kincaid that led to 14 points for the Bills. And the way Tyler Bass has been kicking it, like, if you don't convert on those third downs, now all of a sudden those are mid to longer 40 yard kicks, 45, 48 yards. Like, I don't know if that's a gimme at all. So, like, this kind of put that out of range.
All right. So Amari Cooper does score that touchdown on that drive. It did not start off well for Cooper, obviously, had that huge drop. By the way, massive drop on the first series. I mean, if he doesn't have that drop, maybe we're talking about a totally different start to the game for the Bills. But instead, they wind up with a bunch of three and outs, including that one. But he comes back. The Bills have a lot of faith in him. Joe Brady, Josh Allen, they still have faith in him. Makes a couple big catches, including the touchdown. And it was great to see Amari Cooper score that touchdown inside that stadium. All the Coop chants that went up from the crowd, and he gets his first touchdown in a Bills uniform. Amari Cooper winds up on the day. Let me get you his numbers here because I want to get you to Keon Coleman.
Four for 66 and a touchdown.
Thank you very much.
66, five targets.
Well, he 4 for 66, and yet he was still not even close to the number one receiver on the team in yardage. That was Keon Coleman, who had his biggest day as a pro. 4 catches, 125, 31-yard average per catch. Mm-hmm. A lot of that came run after catch. He was fantastic with the ball in his hands once he caught it.
Yeah, and that, keep in mind, had one wiped off because of the touchdown that got disallowed. Bye-bye. I've seen a lot of people say that it was a touchdown. Now, my vantage point from the press box is a little bit tricky. It looks like he lost control of the ball before he regained control. And when he regained control, then his toe was slightly out of bounds. I don't know for sure. Either way,
I thought it was tough to overturn from my vantage point, and I have not studied the replay. People can say, no, Sal, you're wrong. What I saw was he had 1 foot down as he caught it, turned to put the other foot down, and then as a third foot came down is when he lost it. But I could be wrong there.
So I think Keon Coleman had a good day, a really good game. I think for him, the ability to extend a play in the first half where Josh is rolling out, of course, to his right, and Coleman realizes that, and I think just goes off script, and then they connect for that big gain, and then they score a couple plays later. I think that was a really good sign for Keon Coleman. The other ones are, you know, what you expect, and then obviously he breaks off the really long one at the end of the game. That catch happens, and you're thinking, like, okay, this is going to be an 80-yard touchdown or something. He does get caught from behind. He's not the fastest guy in the world. Right. If he was the fastest guy in the world, he would have been a top 10 pick, and he wouldn't have been an early pick in the second round. So the contested catches are good. The separation, there was a little bit more of that today. And
it's so funny, by the way, can I interrupt you? As he's running down the field and they're catching him, they get to him. And I thought about that. I'm like, well, here come the people who go, see, he can't separate or run past everybody. Still a fantastic play, though.
Well, I thought about him when somebody asked him when he was drafted, like, if he was slow. They didn't ask it so bluntly. And he was like, I don't know if I've ever been caught from behind. Well, he got caught from behind twice in this game, but he still had his most productive day as a pro. I mean, this is a guy who's putting in the work. I mean, we saw him on Thursday after practice for 45 minutes working with Russell Douglas after practice had ended. And then we talked to him and we're like, you know, anything particular you're working on? And he was like, it's a secret. I don't want to really talk about it. But kudos to him for putting in the work. Also, kudos to Russell Douglas for being willing to put in that extra time. I mean, he's a veteran in this league, and he's willing to work 45 minutes after practice with this guy. And I think having Amari Cooper will give him more favorable matchups. And I think that that'll benefit everybody.
And then there's good old reliable Khalil Shakir, as we're talking about the wide receivers. 7 targets, 7 catches, including, get this, 5 catches in a span of six plays late in the fourth quarter, where Josh Allen's just throwing it to Khalil. He's like, okay, you catch it and run. You catch it and run. You catch it and run. Totaled up 50 yards on those plays that kind of sealed the deal towards the end of the game. It was good to see Khalil Shakir back. But one thing that One thing, a couple things I noticed. Number one, still some separation issues with the wide receivers. However,
very early, yes.
Once Amari Cooper started to get going, it really opened up a lot for everyone else.
Yeah, that first half, I mean, the three drives that they go three and out on, the first one ends because of the Amari Cooper drop on third down. The second one ends on a play that I thought Josh Allen could run the ball, but he tries to take a deep shot, and there's nobody open. Like, from our vantage point, I saw a couple people online say that he had Kincaid underneath that he could have connected with. I didn't see it from where we're watching the game. Maybe he did. And then the third one, he has all of the time in the pocket on third down, and he tries to hit a strike across the middle of the field. But once again, none of his guys are open. There's no separation. So I do still think that it's a concern. I'm not like, oh, the wide receivers are fixed after a game against basically all backups in the Titan secondary. But the second half was a lot better than the first half.
The Titans did come into this game with the number one pass defense in the entire NFL. I understand they did have a couple injuries, there's no doubt. But Josh Allen still wound up on against that number one defense in the entire NFL, pass defense, 21 of 33. Mm-hmm. And this is including a pretty terrible first half for the team overall, and Josh's numbers were not good. 21 of 33, which is 64%, mm-hmm. and 323 yards. And two TDs. They had not allowed a 300-yard passer or a 100-yard receiver until Sunday. And look, again, it was not the cleanest. I'm not sitting here and tell you, oh, my God, they were amazing. They weren't. But they put up some really good numbers against a really good defense at the end of the day.
Okay. You're right. But let's also look a little bit more into who they have played. They played whatever backup was playing for the Dolphins. They played Malik Willis. They played Caleb Williams in his first ever game. They played Joe Flacco. Like, they're not playing
Aaron Rodgers.
In Aaron Rodgers week. They're not playing earth beaters here. These are good signs for the Bills, but the Titans' defense was inflated significantly because of the bad teams that they have played. The defense is not bad, but it is certainly the defense they played last week is much better than the defense they played today.
Let's talk about the defensive side. Well, real quick, before I get to the defense, what did you think about Josh Allen's game overall?
I thought he played a really good second half. I mean, I think that he has the ability to have bad halves and salvage them. I mean, it's kind of like he didn't have a bad half against the Cardinals because he just wasn't on the field and they had the fumble. There were a couple plays that I thought he could have had, that I thought he could have extended with his legs and picked up the first down on the ground.
This is a theme going back to week one since hurting the hand.
Yeah, it's a theme. And he once again wore the glove today. So even though he practiced without the glove this week, it is definitely still something that's at least bothering him a little bit because he's wearing the glove. And I don't think he would unless it was like legitimately still like either hurting or potentially hindering him. But I mean, there are plays, you know, I started the podcast by talking about those two catches to Dalton or the catches from Dalton Kincaid. Those are also just dots. Those are seeds. Those are perfect throws that very few guys can make. You know, the extendability that goes to the Keon Coleman catch in the first half is a good play. Checking to the touchdown to Amari Cooper because the defense is in the look that they're in is a good play. So, I mean, I think he played a very good game, and it would have been a great game if not for a slow start.
What I didn't like from the offense, I know we're bad and good here, but let's say on the offense, what I didn't like the game plan from Joe Brady. I thought the game plan to come out of the game, to start the game, was not good. I thought, in fact, at one time, and my buddy Eric Wood gave me credit, and I'll say that, because I said during a break to Eric Wood and Chris Brown, I said, can they please just put Josh under center and run right at the Tennessee Titans? Everything's taking way too long to develop in the run game, and it did, and James Cook could not get going. James Cook ran for just 2.7 yards a carry. Finally, they go under center. They give it to Ray Davis. He busts off a 22-yarder like right after that happened. However, that being said, I didn't like the game plan. They were still trying to fit the ball into tight windows. They were still trying to run the ball that took a little too long to develop. And that's why, to me, you had the slow start. It took way too long to get to a spot where the Bills could actually move the ball. And that included on the ground. They just had a tough go of it in the run game, averaging just 3.7 yards a carry.
Yeah, there's that. And there's also, to me, just the idea of like these late developing routes with wide receivers who have not been able to consistently show that they can separate, do quick things, get the ball out of Josh's hands fast, like give him the layups and let them dink and dunk their way down the field and then take the shot plays when they become available. And it just didn't feel like that was in the cards. I mean, that's what we're talking about on those first three and outs. It's like, why are you trying to throw a 40-yard pass down the field on the run to Keon Coleman And why are you trying to hit Mac Hollins? And why are you trying to throw a 30-yarder to Dawson Knox? Like, there should be easier answers to this than you're giving. So they adjusted well, and to that they deserve credit. But the start was, I think, a little bit of poor execution, but more poor game planning.
All right, let's go to the other side of the ball, where the Bills defense basically just had to keep them in this game as long as possible. And it didn't really take all that long when I say it that way, because the Titans only scored 10 points. But boy, you just felt like the defense almost had to score at one point until the offense really started to kind of turn it around and do their thing. But the Titans, in the first couple of drives, they moved the ball, really nickel and dime the Bills all the way down the field. Mm-hmm. They did score a touchdown. They kicked a field goal. Talked with players after the game and said, look, we'll take that. It's all about not letting up the points. They did a nice job there. I thought the Titans had a great game plan coming into the game. All they did was rollouts and screens and dump downs and check downs. You look at their leading receivers.
Their tight ends eight in this game because yes, the Bills basically were like, we're going to let you. Now, in the beginning, it was gashing them. But I think the Bills' game plan was like, we're going to not let Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins beat us. And we're going to let everybody else just kind of, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts. But we think eventually we're going to stop you.
Yeah. And that being said, the Bills did a very nice job against the run, though. I just said the Bills did not run the ball well at 3.7 yards a carry. The Titans didn't run the ball well at 3.7 yards a carry. The Bills did a really nice job. I want to give a lot of credit to the defensive front, because I think when a team is playing the way the Titans were, which is quick pass, quick pass, quick pass, you get frustrated. And now you're slowing down a little bit. And you're like, what are you watching for? You're on your heels. But you know what? They kept their foot on the gas. And when the time came, they put pressure on Mason Rudolph. I'm going to give you a stat here. The Bills were credited with 11 quarterback hurries. Every one of them came from a defensive lineman, not from any linebackers through blitzes. Oh. And Greg Rousseau, himself, six quarterback hurries he was credited with.
Yeah, this was the Greg Rousseau splash game that we've been kind of waiting on since the Cardinals game.
Yeah.
He had a favorable matchup. He took advantage of it. He is a player who can kind of splash like this. I thought he had a good game. I thought Daquan Jones made a couple big plays. Ed Oliver, having him back out there, was noticeable. I think we mentioned the big stop from Dwayne Carter that I thought was impressive. AJ Epinesa and Smoot have also flashed at times. You want to see a little bit more consistency with the defensive line. But also keep in mind, and I'm not suggesting that he is what he once was, they're still without Von Miller, who had sacks in three straight games to start the season. They will get him back after the Seahawks game. So that might also provide a little bit of a spark for their defensive line. But yeah, I mean, Rousseau was fantastic in this game. He was probably their best defensive player.
Yeah, and we talked about Terrell Bernard. Let's just mention Terrell Bernard had an ankle injury. First, he got evaluated for a head injury after a fumble that he tried to scoop and score, and the Bills eventually did not recover. Gets evaluated for a head injury, gets cleared, and goes back in the game. Later in the game, gets not rolled up on. He got stepped on and twisted his ankle. He's down. That looked pretty bad. Trainers were looking at him. He came over. He came off. He was looked at in the tent. He went back in the game, and then Matt, he lasted two plays, came back out of the game, and never went back in. Something obviously to monitor. I will say after the game, saw Terrell Bernard in the locker room, as I'm sure you might have. He was not in a boot or anything that was aiding his walking in any way. Seemed like he was sore, but we'll see where it goes. Obviously something to monitor as the game goes on, but he was also terrific, as he usually is.
Yeah, I mean, splash plays, right? Like, that's just what he does. He makes the splash plays, and that's what the Bills have always wanted from their linebackers. To, once again, not doctors, we don't know. But after he got ruled out, he was on the sideline, and I think he was on the sideline with his helmet, which is usually like a sign of like, I'm ready to go. If it was a closer game, I don't know if he gets ruled out as quickly as he did, but he had been banged up so many times in this game. I felt like I was always tweeting, Terrell Bernard is in the blue medical tent being evaluated for X, Y, or Z. It was a 14-point game when they ruled him out in the fourth quarter. If it was closer, maybe he does come back in. You obviously don't want to see one of your best players on defense banged up again, especially because you've already missed him for a good chunk of the season. But it didn't seem to me like something of like a, whoa, this is like a really bad injury. Like the last time he got injured in Miami, like that was like a, ooh, you got to see how long this is going to be. This felt more like a, let's be smart about this and we'll see if, you know, just we can make sure he's ready to go next week or the week after that.
Now, Tyler Boyd was the Titans' top wide receiver, 5 catches, 43 yards. He didn't kill the Bills in that regard. As we said, I know, as we talked about, you know, there's really mostly tight ends and running backs. But how about this? Calvin Ridley, just 3 catches for 42 yards, nine targets.
They made it a point.
After a week where he was 0 for 8 on targets and catches from, you know, Will Levis, this time Mason Rudolph, 3 from 9, and DeAndre Hopkins, 1 reception, -2 yards.
I wonder if DeAndre Hopkins was like talking to the general manager of the Titans after the game and was like, can you just like leave me here? Can we like trade the Bills? Can you trade me the Bills for like a fifth round pick or something? I still think that they're not going to do this, but I still think another receiver would be a cool addition for the Bills. I feel like they still could have one more guy. Financially, they would have a lot of stuff they got to figure out, but he's probably a player that is going to get moved. I just assume that he'll get traded to like the Chiefs or something, right?
I think so too. I keep thinking the Chiefs got to make the most sense, right? Yeah, they were rumored to be on him, you know, last year, 2 years ago, whatever it was. We know the Steelers and the Jets could be looking to have a Mike Williams deal in place sometime soon, it appears.
Yeah.
DeAndre Hopkins, I was listening to Show Up with the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550, our Odyssey station, obviously, after the game on the postgame show. And I didn't know this, but Mike Shope said on the TV broadcast, they showed DeAndre Hopkins basically just on the sidelines, not even really watching what was going on and kind of like just checked out basically. So I wonder if, you know, that's coming at some point soon.
Yeah, probably.
The deadline is November 5th, which is election night, by the way.
Probably. Wow. Just a brutal straight drop. I'm watching this Steelers Jets game right now, and I'm a little bit behind probably with the actual broadcast. Is yeah, he's gonna get moved.
Where are you? I'm watching the Steelers punt at this very moment.
I'm watching the Steelers punt also.
Okay, so there.
I would imagine DeAndre Hopkins gets moved. I would imagine Deontay Johnson potentially gets moved. I would imagine I don't know. After that, those are the kind of only like obvious ones that I would think that get traded. But the Bills got their guy, and he had a really good game, so that's a good sign. Oh, they just muffed the punt.
Yeah, but it rolled out of bounds. Yeah. We're watching closely this Jets-Steelers game. A couple of games in the AFC that went the Bills' way that we can talk about at the very end, but one did not, obviously, with the Kansas City Chiefs. I want to get to, however, a little bit more here, especially special teams, Tyler Bass. Listen, he needed today. It wasn't like some amazingly overwhelming day, but it was a needed day for Tyler Bass and the Bills. They brought in a kicker. They signed him to the practice squad. This does not fix all the issues or make you say, oh, my God, we're good to go here. But Tyler Bass was 6 for 6 on his kicks, which is a lot better than what he had been throughout the season.
Lived to fight another day. Didn't do anything. There are no mistakes in this game. Mm-hmm. Tyler Bass needs more games where there's no mistakes.
Yep.
And he needs to string these together. The seat is already hot, and a day like today does not make the seat – I don't want to, it makes it a little less hot because it's not as recent as it was, but it's still a hot seat and they still have a kicker here on the practice squad. So just need to see more of this. It was good to see him respond because like you're on the sideline. It was really windy today. It was a pretty windy day. So that's a good sign for him.
Yeah. After the game in the locker room, I'm talking with Tyler Bass and I said, on a, you know, pretty windy day. And Sam Martin goes, Sal, pretty windy. You were down there. Like, it was really windy. I said, yeah, I guess you're right. It was really windy. Yeah. It was a windy day.
Yeah. So, I mean, he made a 28-yard field goal and a 30-yard field goal in the extra points. Like, if he didn't make any of – if he missed one of those, we're having a completely different conversation. But he made them all. So, to his credit, he deserves the credit for not having any mistakes in this game.
All right. Another guy that really flew under the radar for how important he was today. Brandon Codrington.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he flew under the radar. He was great.
Okay.
He has been great.
Okay. I appreciate you saying that because obviously I'm down on the sidelines. I'm not watching online or Twitter or anything like that. I'm not listening to the broadcast. But I think the story today after the game was, oh my God, the lows of the lows, the highs of the highs, Amari Cooper, Keon Coleman, Josh Allen, Tyler Bass. But here's Brandon Codrington, who just really did a nice job to make sure they had not bad field position, made good decisions, caught the ball, windy conditions, had a great punt, kick return, averaged 11 yards of punt return. I said when I saw this kid play for the first time after the Jets traded him, I said the Jets might regret trading this kid to the Bills because he looks really good. I thought today was a really fantastic day for him. Overall, although the Bills special teams did have a punt partially blocked, which is not a good thing from Sam Martin. But, man, Brandon Codrington looked really good.
Yeah, I mean, he made that big splash play that kind of gave the Bills a little bit of life on the run return. I mean, he averaged, what, like 12 yards a punt return or something? 11.2 yards per punt return. He had the 27-yard return on the kick. I think he's been rock solid. And like you said, it was really windy, so that's not perfect ideal conditions to return in. But I think he has been consistently awesome for the Bills. And I just feel like it's a matter of time until he breaks one off, right? Like he just,
I agree.
He's so close. Like he feels like he's just going to have one that pops off and that'll be a big moment for the Bills.
Okay, well, I said that there were a few games that went the Bills' way early on Sunday. Obviously, later, the Chiefs wind up winning. That's not great. I mean, they're 5-0 now. It's pretty amazing they're doing this, even despite all the injuries. But then again, the Niners had a ton of injuries. They were down to, like, basically, you know, calling people out of the stands to play wide receiver in this game against the Chiefs. That said, big win for the Packers over the Texans. We're concerned with the Texans side of this. They now drop to 5-2. Obviously, they have the tiebreaker on the Bills. But as we go on midseason, now we're getting to the middle of the season, you still want to keep these things in, you know, in mind what's happening. And then, of course, the Miami Dolphins without Tua drop to 2-4 after a loss to the Indianapolis Colts. The Dolphins come to Buffalo in 2 weeks. The Bills go to the Colts in 3 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I'm looking at right now, it's funny. The Bills are in third place in the AFC right now. And, you know, a couple weeks ago, for a lot of people, like, the sky was falling, this team stinks. I mean, a lot of people probably thought that in the first half of the game that they just played.
Hey, let me ask you, I got to ask you this question. I am so glad I am not on social media during the game. Because I can't imagine what it's like and what it was like during the first half versus the second half. And I can't, because... let me tell you a quick story. So I love Syracuse basketball, and I watch Syracuse basketball. I'm a big diehard fan. And maybe about, I don't know, 10 years ago, Twitter's been around a while, like 10, 9, 8 years ago, whatever. I just would be on Twitter watching the games, and I'd be reading things and getting mad, and I'd be arguing with people and telling you my thoughts. And I got so wrapped up in that I wasn't watching the game and appreciating the game. And then one year I said, I'm just not going to do that anymore. I'm going to shut the computer off, shut my phone down, and at halftime, I might tweet a couple of thoughts, but I'll watch the game. And it made it so much more of an enjoyable experience for me. I would so hate to be reading during the game as this is going on, knowing there's still three quarters to play.
Let me read you a couple texts from a group message that I'm in. All right. I'm not going to divulge the names. All right. This is my fantasy football group message.
All right.
Worst offense in the league, 1:39 p.m. The Bills expletives suck, 142.
I love it.
The Bills are terrible, 152. I hate this team, 152. They are so terrible. I hate this team so much? 214. All capitals, terrible. They are frauds. Blah, blah, blah. Come on. Oh, my God. These guys stink. And then, like, oh, wow, great play and all that stuff. I mean, this is a microcosm. Every person in Western New York has a group message that's like that. You know, like the texts I used to get from my dad were some of the funniest messages ever during these games.
What'd he be like during this game?
Oh, my God. Like, there would be moments he would lose his mind. I mean, my dad, I've said the story on the podcast before. My dad used to bring up his clothes for the week to the living room and iron them in front of the TV because had so much nervous energy watching these games. Okay. And like I'd have that. To remind, he was like, I'm going to be productive if I've got this nervous energy. But, you know, it really matters to a lot of people. And like these people, you know, it's hard to rationalize. Like there was a half of football today where it looked like they were going to lose.
Oh, for sure. Well, I keep thinking, listen, we all know that, you know, people just are very quick and want to any moment they can. Many, many, many fans just jump on coaching and Sean McDermott now. And it's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. It's just he's not their favorite. And because of, you know, blunders late in games and the team never getting to a Super Bowl yet in this regime, like it just open season on Sean McDermott at any point. And I'm sure that was happening during the game. And then everything turns. And I wonder, do those same people then say, hey, the coaching staff did a good job of getting them out of that situation and making adjustments? Because it is a long game and it is a long season. There's so many different things that happen. But I think about things like that and what they're going on. And I'm glad I do not check my social media during the game.
Let's answer a couple questions before we call it a night. Does that work?
It does. I will give you one final thing. Remind me not to leave without telling you something that happened to me very embarrassing on the sidelines tonight.
Okay. I will not let you leave. The Steelers are getting killed by screen passes here. Okay. A lot of these are about the slow starts, and rightfully so. But like, here's one from Steve. Who exactly is designing the first half offensive game plan? Seems like a completely different mindset come the second half. Has McDermott provided particular input before coming back out to play? I mean, it's Joe Brady. It's Joe Brady's offense. So he is designing it, but like a good coach, I think he is able to adjust and see what defenses are doing. And I think that's what a lot of coaching is in the league. I know, like Peyton Manning said, like second half adjustments are nonsense. And to an extent, he's right. Like, make good plays when you can make good plays. But I think that it's a Joe Brady thing. And you know, another question somebody asked is like, why is Joe Brady so innovative at times and so stale at others? I mean, he's a young play caller in the NFL, and like, it's not a super, it's not like linear. There's always little bumps. Like, there's good and then there's bad.
And, you know, I mean, we say this all the time. It's true. We've said this and you've heard it. The other team gets paid too. They're professional players, professional athletes, professional coaches. They're paid to stop you. Mm-hmm. I agree. Joe Brady's game plan was not good today. I didn't like the game plan. I thought that the Bills waited too long for a lot of things to develop, run game and pass game, and should have gone with a more of a quicker strike type of game, should have ran more downhill and physical like they did against the Jets early in the game. But it took a little while. They understood that and they made adjustments. That's what good coaching does. One other thing that they do sometimes that I don't like that Joe Brady does is he runs the same play like two times in a row. Like, hey, this worked and I'm going to show you it's going to work again. Where you look, if the other team sees it, they've kind of just been aware of it. So, you know, that doesn't work like that. And then listen, again, this is the example and the point I was just making. We're talking about, someone asked about the design of the offense and wants to blame Sean McDermott. It's not his offense. It's Joe Brady's offense. Sean McDermott is the defensive, he doesn't run the defense. He's a defensive minded coach and he is responsible for the offense because he's responsible for the whole team, but he is not coming up with the game plan for the offense. Joe Brady's doing that.
Yeah. The Jets just scored on my TV. Did they score on your TV?
Is that Braylon Allen?
Breece Hall.
Oh, Breece Hall scored. Thank you.
Breece Hall can run on other teams too. It's not just the Bills, right? Oh, wow. Like, it's like, what a thought here. Sitting Samuel for a few weeks to get healthy. That's more of a statement than a question. A couple people asking about Curtis Samuel.
I'm glad they brought him up though. He was the one that did leave with an injury and did
a shoulder injury for sure.
By the way, he that was something that was bothering him last week during the game.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Can the Bills stop Geno and DK? Well, we'll talk more about that on an episode of this later in the week. There's a lot of really good questions here. What's up with the inability to defend the middle of the field against passes? Yeah. I feel like that's been the area where teams have tried to attack them. It's, I think, a pretty simple answer. It's teams don't test Christian Benford and Russell Douglas because they're very good.
I think it's a twofold answer. That's part of it. I think that Dorian Williams gets picked on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of it too. Yeah. And Terrell Bernard can't do everything back there. You know, you're trying for Terrell Bernard. He's such a fantastic player. He's guy patrolling the middle of the field, but he's also got to go and react to play action. Lots of different things that go on there. Last week, there was a play against the New York Jets last week that Troy Aikman blamed Damar Hamlin on. I don't know if you remember this, against the Jets. Troy Aikman blamed Damar Hamlin for getting there late. It wasn't Damar Hamlin's fault. It was play action and Bernard got sucked in and it should have been his zone, but he was in conflict. It's tough. I mean, that they ran a nice play. So that's part of the reason too. And when you're running quick game with tight ends, where are tight ends mostly going to be available? In the middle of the field. Yeah. Where are dump downs to running backs going to be available? In the middle of the field.
How worried are you about the first half? It's a good question.
How worried am I? I'm not at all. I mean, they won the game 34-10. Not worried about the first half. What concerns me though is they've had a few of these slow starts this year.
Well, they've fallen behind in the second half. They've played from behind in the second half against the Cardinals, against the Ravens, against the Texans, and then again in this game. They also briefly fell behind against the Jets. Like they have been playing from behind. Like it's been a bit of a eventually you're going to dig yourself in too deep of a hole that you can't climb out.
Like the Ravens game. Even the Texans game to a point.
Oh, definitely. I mean, who knows if that game is 10-7 instead of 17-7 or whatever it was at the half, or 20, whatever it was, like maybe the result of that game is different. So sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It's just, this has been a theme this year.
I mean, they were not good in the first half, and we could blame coaching game plans or execution. Look, I'll say this. If Amari Cooper catches the first pass thrown to him, I think it's a different first half. I really do. I think they get a first down. It's not three and out. They go down the field a little bit. What did you think of the decision to take the ball after winning the coin toss?
I assumed it was weather related because it feels like that's what they do. And then Sean kind of confirmed that afterwards. He said they thought the wind was going to be a bigger factor in the second half than the first half. So they wanted another possession with the wind not being as big of a factor, which makes a ton of sense. I was surprised by it. It stinks because I think that when you're aggressive and you go for it, you should be rewarded. And they were aggressive and they went for it. And then they were, you know, punished because of a drop. And I liked the theory and the logic behind it.
I didn't love it. I like starting on defense first. I like getting this first half, first possession of the second half. I think you adjust some things. You can have that double dip that coaches like to talk about a lot. Sometimes I think what happens, the reason why Bills have had, I think, troubles at the ends of games at times under Sean McDermott goes to kind of the heart of what he just said. Like that to me is almost overthinking things. Mm-hmm. Well, is the wind going to be worse in the second half? And we're going to want to do that. Whereas maybe to me, it's just simpler to say, no, we start on defense. We get two possessions here at the end, one at the end of the first, one to hopefully to start the second. Hopefully it didn't thankfully wind up hurting them, but those are the kinds of things I think about. But look, if you're going to take the ball first, you better go down and score. That's why I look at it. And they didn't. They went three and out. So that wound up hurting them in that situation. It was interesting, though. The Jets got to choose to take the ball in the second half. The Bills gave the Titans the wind and said, we'll take it in the fourth quarter. So the Bills actually, even down 10-7, gave the Titans the win with the ball and the wind to start the second half.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a surprise. We'll do one more question and then we can call it a night. Okay. This is from Matt, and I think it's an easy answer. Is Dawson Knox on the team past the trade deadline?
100% yes.
I think absolutely.
I don't know if people realize his contract. They're not trading him.
Nobody would take that on. I think Dawson Knox is here for the rest of the year, and you just kind of have to live with the contract, right? I mean, it's a bad contract for the Bills. I think that he'll eventually make a couple plays for the team, right? But I don't think it'll ever live up to what they paid him.
I'll go a step further. I think as I sit here right now that Dawson Knox on this team next year.
You're probably right.
I mean, it's a $16 million cap hit in the offseason. Yeah. Almost 17. Dude, he's here for at least this year and next year. And then maybe you could do they reworked the contract, which makes it tougher to even move on from him. So, I think that. All right. So let me get to my little anecdote. What happened to me?
Yes.
Matthew Bova, in 11 years, I've been patrolling the sidelines for the Buffalo Bills. Home games, away games, stadiums with room, without room. First time ever, I was hit by a Reed Ferguson long snap.
Oh, no. While he was practicing down there. Oh, no. Where did it hit you?
And it hit me. I will say if it was maybe an inch and a half more to the right, it would have really, really been a big issue.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad that it missed
now,
you.
Almost. Hold on. Now I would also say I want to give a shout out to Reed Ferguson. He knew I was there. He even kind of sort of said he did it on purpose to kind of like, hey, get out of the way. And he totally laid off it. He could have really hit me and he didn't. So thank you, Reed, for not doing that.
I did not know the story. However, I won't divulge my source, but when I posted on Twitter recording our post-game podcast, any questions for Sal Sports and I, someone with the Bills texted me and said, ask Sal about the long snap on the sideline. I won't tell you who did it.
Okay, see? Now you know.
But I didn't know what they were referring to. I had no idea what they were referring to.
All right, so listen. Shout out Reed Ferguson. He could have really made things my life much more difficult over the next couple of weeks, and he didn't.
Yeah.
He knew I was standing there, and I know better. And can I tell you what happened? You will appreciate this.
Sure.
It happened during Mr. Brightside. I was into the song so much, I was looking up at the crowd, and I was walking. I was like doing this with the crowd. And then I kind of walked right to where they were snapping it, and I didn't see it. And bam, I got hit.
Can I quickly give you a Mr. Brightside take?
Sure. As
somebody who loves the song.
Stop playing it?
No.
Oh.
It doesn't have to be original for it to be cool. I've seen a couple people hate it online, and they're like, other teams do this. It doesn't matter what other teams do.
Right.
Other teams were not the first people to ever rock out to Mr. Brightside. Yeah. Now, the situation has to make sense. They have to be winning. It has to be, you know, like the vibes have to be good. If they're getting crushed, you shouldn't be playing Mr. Brightside. But they weren't. They were winning. Vibes were high. Beautiful day in Orchard Park. and people should enjoy it. I think it's a really cool addition to the game day atmosphere in Buffalo. And today was pretty peak conditions for a Bills game in Orchard Park.
Hey, thanks a lot for tuning in to It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Wherever you do, whenever you do, we're here. We're online on, of course, on audio and video as well at Sal Sports on the YouTube channel. That's where you can find It's Always Game Day in Buffalo all the time. Of course, wherever you pod, we will be back later this week to talk about what we both have said many times is one of our favorite trips, to go to Seattle. We don't get to do it very much. It's going to be very cool. We'll talk a lot more about that trip as well. Mike Robbie, our producer, doing a great job behind the scenes here on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. All right, Matt. Well, enjoy 5-2 and looking forward to this trip to Seattle. Go ahead.
Real quick, if you have any Seattle recommendations, send them our way.
Okay.
I'm going out to Seattle on Thursday. I would love to know about some cool local spots or cool local things to do. A bunch of people responded to a tweet I had on Twitter about Mount Rainier. I'm trying to go hike Mount Rainier, but I would also love to know about like some cool restaurants or bars or like.
Are you going out with your wife? Is she going out with you?
Yeah, Thursday, we're going out there. We're going to spend most of the day, whenever we get in Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then I think she's going to go to the game on Sunday.
I will. I appreciate that. That's great. And I'll have more on this later in the week, but I don't see my brother very often. He lives in Oregon. He will be driving up to Seattle.
Oh, sweet. That's cool.
As well. Wow. So that'd be very cool.
Really cool. So yeah, any recommendations, fire them our way.
Until the next time, we'll talk to you. And it's always Game Day in Buffalo.